Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 411 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 4th of January, 2019, as I record this. And well, the question is, are we now into the new year? I know we are technically, but it's hard to say whether or not people are actually back into the swing of it. By the time you listen to this on Monday, we should be into 2019. I must say I'm still a little worse for wear, but starting to rev up, and I expect to be back at full throttle on Monday, raring to go. It's definitely taken a bit longer than expected. But today I'm talking about lessons for 21st century creatives with Mark McGuinness. And Mark is one of my wise creative friends. He has a background in psychotherapy and he's a poet as well as an entrepreneur. And we're also friends in real life as well. So we always have some good chat and we talk about setting boundaries, the different types of assets that you might want to create, creative ecosystems, self-care, and our mutual excitement about audio, both creating in audio and I guess marketing in audio as well. And I was on Mark's podcast, The 21st Century Creative, last week talking about the healthy creative. So you can always go listen to that if you need some New Year's sort of impetus, I guess. And I, by the time you listen to this, I will have started my cycle training for 2019. That's my big push this year. We'll be cycling, starting spinning classes because it's really, really cold here right now, and moving on to outdoor cycling a bit later on. Okay, so in publishing news this week, just a reflection on a couple of the number of roundups. There are a lot of roundups on various publishing sites. Of course, I've had my own roundup of 2018 and a look forward into 2019. So I'm just going to pick a couple that I think are interesting. And the first one from Mark Coker of Smashwords. Now, I've known Mark since the beginning of my own self-publishing journey, you know, back in the day when Smashwords was the only option for authors. Obviously, there's lots of other options now, but Mark, very insightful and has always been anti-exclusivity, has always had a view about Amazon. And it's interesting, this year he talks about something that I think I've definitely heard from people. He talks about sensing an unease among US-based authors in particular about the direction of the industry and Amazon's increasing power. Mark says, Amazon's strategy is forcing authors to make short-term decisions that undermine their long-term careers. It's tough making a living writing books. But authors who put all their eggs in the Amazon basket tell me they now feel trapped. And this is a quote from his blog post. But basically, authors saying they are working harder than ever, producing their best work ever, and yet sales are dropping year after year. So I think this is really interesting on a number of levels. I mean, obviously, Mark is... his whole business model is being wide. So that is, you know, important to take into consideration. But I've heard this from a lot of people too. And for me, as ever, you know, I bang the drum about multiple streams of income. And also, you know, if you're feeling this way, then take back your independence in 2019. You will need to put some money away as a buffer, because if you are going to go wide, it's not an instantaneous quick fix as such. But if you build a wide base, so I guess the reason I'm pretty much 99% hopeful most of the time and positive. It's just a natural characteristic, I know, but also because I have built a very, very wide base for my income. And that's not just with the number of books I've got, but also with courses, with the website income, with now the Patreon. Thank you, all the patrons, with the sponsorship, with all the different things that I have in terms of income streams. That means that I can make these decisions away from exclusivity. And I know some people have said to me, oh, well, you know, I don't have any choice. Well, you do. So this year, really think about independence. I know I've talked a lot about this, but it is something that is now being talked about, I think, in a much more open way. Mark has said, you know, in terms of thoughts for 2019, talked about the rise of audiobooks, which pretty much everyone is talking about. That is not a new thing. But also mentions that more authors and readers will abandon Facebook and the big tech companies will face more scrutiny. So that might impact us in other ways. It's really interesting in Europe because France have imposed a digital tax. Well, I don't know if they've actually implemented it yet, but talking about taxing the big tech companies in a much bigger way. So that's interesting from the perspective of these costs will be passed down in different ways. Mark also says, which is, I think, fascinating, ebook sales will rise if there is a recession, as it's a cheaper form of entertainment. Now, if you read the financial press, as I do, there's obviously a lot of discussion about financial turbulence in 2019. Lots of things going on that means it may well be a very turbulent year economically and politically in many ways. But it's interesting because the political craziness of 2016 meant lower book sales because people were sort of attached to their news. but it's interesting. I actually think that escape into audiobooks, so back into audiobooks, what's interesting about audiobook listening and listening while doing other things, so say you're out walking or you're doing chores or you're doing other stuff, that you can listen to an audiobook and kind of escape into another world at the same time as getting stuff done. So I actually think that financial turbulence and a sort of potential, you know, whatever happens, it's not going to be a massive growth year. But potentially audiobooks will be even more impacted by this because they are, something you can escape into and you can close your eyes and you can just be like in another world. So that's interesting. So you can check that out at the blog.smashwords.com. And as ever, I will link to these in the show notes. The other person who is a lot of posts on this is Christine Catherine Rush. Now, obviously, I'm a Chris Rush fangirl and always listen to what Chris has to say. Now, because I'm a patron of Chris's nonfiction articles, I've actually already read her articles about 2019, which she is posting on her blog every Thursday. So I'm not going to share anything she shared in her Patreon, although obviously you can support that yourself if you want to read everything. But she's doing an excellent series of articles about publishing trends. The first one is about the stages of disruption in business in general, and particularly in publishing. Talks about us being in stage three of the stages of disruption, where the disruption becomes a permanent part of the industry. It's not going to go away. It has changed things and will continue to change things. In many ways, the disruption isn't really a disruption anymore. It's becoming status quo. Chris also talks about the inevitable plateau of sales and the decline from the gold rush of the early days of this disruption. And I think this is why a lot of authors who did potentially make, you know, big money in earlier years, is the decline comes because it's not a gold rush anymore. And I've heard the same from many traditionally published friends, that things are more difficult. And this is mainly because sales are spreading out. Readers have a lot of choice. Chris says the consumer spends the same amount of money, but spreads it out over a wider range. And many of these sales are untrackable. So you're going to see more articles probably in 2019 about sales declining or sales doing this, that and the other. But yes, many of these sales are untrackable. And Chris says, I'm also seeing a lot of opportunity for indies in the coming year, but the opportunity isn't easy, nor is it as obvious as it was in the early gold rush days. The nimble indie will do a lot better in the years to come than someone who hit a formula and wants to stick to it. So, nimble and multiple streams of income and, yes, all the rest for the win. So you can find all of that at chriswrites.com, K-R-I-S-Writes.com. And again, I always listen to people who have been in the business a long time. Chris and Dean Wesley Smith, her husband, have been in the publishing business like 30 plus years and have seen a lot of this stuff happen in sort of the longer
in longer phases. Whereas I came in, for example, I started self-publishing in 2008, just as the Kindle and ebooks and everything started to happen. And I've never been in traditional publishing, so I can't give a view on that, whereas Chris does. So, and so can Mark Coker as well. So yeah, go check those out. Links in the show notes. So my personal update this week, I have been getting admin done and lots of things sorted and still in health recovery mode as well. And really reflecting on this, I think a lot of my exhaustion comes from 3 weeks almost constantly with other people, because we also stayed in people's houses. And this is difficult for me and my introvert husband. Both of us spend our lives quietly alone or quietly together. Or when we are sociable, it's usually sort of one-on-one with friends. And I do struggle with small talk. I know many of you will appreciate that. And that's pretty much what you have to do when you have large gatherings of family. And unless you want some kind of drama over politics, religion, etc. And we didn't want that. So basically, I feel this level of exhaustion, a sort of multiple of how it feels after an author conference or any kind of conference or large scale event when there's lots of people and you kind of feel peopled out. So yeah, I'm sure many of you feel the same after your Christmas holiday periods. So I'm trying to get back into it for sure. What I have done is made a few steps towards some of my goals. For example, the technical setup for my new content site for fiction. And I'm also preparing a video. So I'm going to record a new video for on my technical setup and the various technology I use and the settings and all of that for my content marketing for fiction course. If you are on that course already, you will get that extra video sometime in the next couple of weeks. And I will continue to add to that course over time as I build this new content marketing site for fiction from scratch. So this is from zero subscribers, zero podcast episodes, zero blog posts, and I will be sharing along the way. So hopefully that will be useful for you. It is just $99 at thecreativepen.com/courses. And of course, will become more and more valuable over time as I add more to it. Right, other useful stuff. So the Amazon Echo was one of the most popular purchases over the holidays. And several of you have said, how do you listen to the Creative Pen podcast on your Echo? So there are a couple of ways you can do it through TuneIn. So there's an app, go to your smartphone app for Alexa, go to Music and Books, go to Podcasts, and you'll find the Creative Pen podcast there through TuneIn. And or thanks to Dave Foster, who emailed about using AnyPod. So you can use the AnyPod skill. So just say, and I'm just going to say it, so if it does activate your device, apologies. So you can say, Alexa, enable AnyPod skill, and then say, Alexa, ask AnyPod to play the Creative Pen podcast. And thus, you can play the show on your device or wherever you are. The other useful thing this week is talking about multiple streams of income, talking about doing courses. Now, many authors do courses, and in fact, teaching is something that writers have always done. Many writers go on to teach in universities or colleges or do writing courses or online, or used to be correspondence. Now it's kind of via the internet. I'm sure there are still some correspondence courses out there, but essentially writers have always taught. And this is super useful if you want to create a course in 2019. Teachable, who I use, a fantastic service. Seriously, I've been doing courses since 2008 when it was much, much harder to. Teachable is amazing. So you can turn what you know into a multimedia course with, they have free awesome training this week, which is the second full week of January 2019. So the full-time creator masterclass, and this is a number of free videos that will show you how to make a full-time living with courses. Or of course, if you would like to make a full-time living from creating stuff, you can combine courses with your books. And if you write nonfiction, this is super because you can turn your nonfiction book into a course, as I have done with How to Write Nonfiction, for example. And if you write fiction, you could do a mini course on how to write the genre that you write, how to write in general. It's incredible how many people want to learn this stuff. So if you want to get those free videos on the full-time creator masterclass, you can go to my affiliate link at thecreativepen.com/teachable19. So TEACHABLE19. So thecreativepen.com/teachable19, and you can get the full-time creator masterclass. So thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments, especially about the last two shows, my end of 2018 roundup and trends for 2019. There were so many, so I'm not going to go through all of them, but a couple of them. Barb Reimer, thank you, Barb, wrote here, "In all business, I have found you need to sit down and redraw the boundaries around what you are creating and selling, how you interact with your customers, and where you want to take the business each year. Then do a really hard sit down every 3 years or so, because so much changes in that time that you often create something that you didn't expect." And that comment really resonated with me. Thank you, Barb, because that's totally true. And I am really redrawing the boundaries around what my business is, how I spend my time, what I want to create, what I want to sell, how I want to interact. All of that completely true. And so I hope that's going to help some of you listening really looking at, okay, what has changed? And I challenged you with that in my 2019, and kind of what attitudes are not serving you anymore, in terms of, you know, maybe things you want, but the world has changed. So, you know, is that a good idea anymore? You know, lots of things that we need to re-examine at this time of year and decide how we want to go forward. So thanks for that, Bob. Also, Amy Cesari challenged me on saying, I said in one of my roundup, I think, I said, I can't write a book on how to write a novel. And she said, you can't say I can't, because you can. And I'm like, yeah, do you know what? My actual response is, I don't want to. And so I don't want to write a book on how to write a novel. Sorry, I just don't. I mean, I know it'd be useful and everything, and I've got 90,000 words of a draft, but I just don't want to. I'm not feeling the creative vibe. I am not feeling the love for that project. So it is fine to set a goal. It is fine to park things and come back to them at another point. I also feel like in doing my How to Write Nonfiction book, that was a lot bigger than I expected. And what I really came out of that book with was a new appreciation of, do not just phone it in. Like, seriously, don't just phone in a book and put it out there and expect people to care. There are enough phoned in books. If you're going to write a book, you really have to put yourself in it, make it personal, and put your heart into it. I really believe that. I think you have to stand out with excellence in this business. And yeah, so there we go. So thanks to Amy for challenging me. And it's okay to say, I don't want to do that, rather than I can't. Just a couple more. Lindsay Barocca says, listening to the roundup while snowshoeing at Mount Bachelor today. Very cool. And of course, Lindsay co-hosts the Science Fiction and Fantasy Marketing Podcast. Another excellent show you can listen to this year. And Hells Bells and Mast Cells says, thank you for doing two podcasts for the new year. More for me to enjoy over the break. Your optimism always gives me a burst of energy. Thank you, Hells Bells. And I'm trying to burst myself full of energy at the moment. And finally, thank you to Nicole Lisa, who sent me a picture of these ledger stones in a Dutch church in Galle, or Galle, maybe Sri Lanka, plus a headstone with a typo in Kandy. So thank you for that. I always love to get pictures from graveyards around the world, one of my dark side things. So today's show is sponsored by Ingram Spark, and I'll play a word from the lovely Robin Cutler in a moment with a fantastic promo code that you can use to get started on Ingram Spark. And just to add my thoughts onto Ingram, so for the last 2 years, I have been going all in with print, have expanded into large print as well as hardbacks and the usual paperbacks. I also do workbooks for my nonfiction. So I pretty much have a lot of print product these days, all print on demand. Some of you have asked how I integrate that with KDP Print. So essentially, I have my own ISBNs and I use the same ISBN for the 5x8 paperback on KDP Print, the same large print. And then I go and put slightly modified files onto Ingram Spark, and then the hardback edition is only on Spark. So yes, you can use both. And if you use Ingram Spark, then you are essentially wide with print. You can access bookstores, libraries, universities, global markets, and more because you have a discount. And this is hugely important because the discount is how all of these booksellers and people make money. So you have to have a discount for them to order your book. And that's why they won't order books from KDP Print, for example. So listen up in a minute and Robin will give you a code if you would like to get started on Ingram Spark. Also, thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. New bumper crop of patrons this week: Marcella Carbo, David Corbley, I want to say Warbly, lovely name, Karen Towell, Emily McCaskill, Lauren Danver, Adrian Lance, Julia Howe, and Annie Marjoram. So thank you so much to all those new patrons and also to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. It means an increasing amount to me, obviously, every month. And I really appreciate it. It means that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And as I approach 10 years of podcasting, it's actually super important for me to know that you want the show to continue, because, you know, some days I feel that the show might have run its course. But then I get excited and you guys send me things that make me feel that has not run its course. So I shall continue, and I have committed for this year. So 2019, we are all in with the podcast. So you can support the show with just a couple of dollars a month or a couple of coffees a month if you're feeling generous. Support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, thank you everybody. Here is a word from our sponsor and then we'll get on with the interview.
Hi everyone, I'm Robin Cutler, director of Ingram Spark, an award-winning independent publishing platform that offers authors, including Joanna Penn, a way to publish and distribute print and ebooks to over 39,000 online and physical booksellers and libraries worldwide. The new year always brings about resolutions, and if you're listening to the Creative Pen podcast, one of yours may be to write and publish your book this year. If so, we hope you'll consider making Ingram Spark part of your publishing journey. With dozens of trim sizes, color, hardcovers, paperbacks, ebooks, global distribution, along with free publisher education to help you succeed, Ingram Spark believes it's your content. We just help you do more with it. Do more with your book this year when you get started at www.ingramspark.com.
Today, I'm back with Mark McGuinness. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Jo. Nice to be back.
Oh, yeah. I reckon this must be fourth time on the show, maybe more.
Fourth time lucky. Let's hope we get it right this time.
Well, just in case people have missed your earlier interviews, Mark is an award-winning poet, a nonfiction author, a creative coach, and international professional speaker, and a friend of mine as well, which is wonderful. His books for authors include Resilience, Motivation for Creative People, and Productivity for Creative People, all of which we have previous interviews on. And today we're talking about 21 Insights for 21st Century Creatives. And I should have said you're a podcaster as well. I forgot to say that.
I am, yes. Yes, that was an idea I borrowed from you.
Well, over the years, we have borrowed ideas from each other, which mm-hmm. I think is an important part of being a creative. But I wanted to start with an overarching question. This is going out at the beginning of 2019. Mm-hmm. The pace of change seems ever faster, and many people are worried, I think, about some of the developments going on in the world, technological, political shifts. And I think there's these two major differing views. So can you just start by kind of outlining what are the two major sort of views around creatives and the future, and how can we face the present and the future in a positive way?
So there are basically two schools of thought, aren't there? There are the enthusiasts. There are the people who are telling us this is the brave new world. and all the gatekeepers have run away and the creators can come out to play and we can go direct to our audience and take control of our platforms and attract our 1,000 true fans and become millionaires overnight.
Or at least over 10 years or maybe more.
Well, you know, there's varying degrees of enthusiasm. I mean, on the other hand, there's the doom mongers and the naysayers. These are the people who say that the internet and smartphones are actually making us dumber by eroding our attention span, that Amazon is destroying literature, Instagram's destroying photography, Spotify or whatever is destroying the music business, and it's getting harder and harder for creatives to make a living. And I know you've highlighted, you know, on the one hand, you talk about great opportunities that there are for authors. And then we regularly see, at least here in the press in the UK, how it's the worst time ever for authors and they're all on the breadline. And it's, you know, so as ever, I think the truth is somewhere in between. And one thing I talk about in the book is the idea that it is always the best of times and the worst of times to be a creative. And I contrast our situation now with Geoffrey Chaucer, one of my heroes, his situation in the 14th century, writing his poetry above a bustling gate and an open sewer. You know, and these days, I think by and large, I think we've got it quite cushy compared to that. There's definitely an issue, I think, particularly around technology in society, that on the one hand, technology gives us the tools to do things like this. And, you know, you and I have got podcasts, we've got books, we've got blogs that go out to thousands of people every week, which was kind of unheard of when I was small. But on the other hand, there's all the distraction, there's all the interruptions, there's the pressure to be always available and always engaging, not to mention sitting at the computer too long. So I think my stance is it's a two-edged sword, but, you know, it was always thus. You know, whether you're in the 18th century or the 21st century or whatever's going to be happening in the 24th century. And our job as creatives is to try and navigate that, to take advantage of the good and minimize the downside.
Yeah, and I think also it's kind of a constant juggling act. I mean, I don't know about you, but I want to learn everything. Like, I love learning more and more. And both of us listen to podcasts as well. And you know, yeah. I listen to one of your shows and I'm like, oh, that person's interesting. And then you go down a rabbit hole and you find another podcast or you find another book and it all just gets a bit overwhelming. And that I find that overwhelm, to me, the best thing to do is turn it all off and step away. Like, I take my journal and just go analog with my handwriting, which is kind of crazy. But it's, yeah. It, you know, it feels like I don't want to let it go, but you kind of have to step out of the stream sometimes to recharge.
Yeah, I think it's very important to know when you're on stage, so to speak, and when you're off stage, and either working, doing focus work, or doing something that's got nothing to do with the internet or business or writing whatsoever, because creatively, not to mention health-wise, as you know, it's essential. If you're always plugged in, if you're always on, if you're always available, your work will suffer, and sooner or later, your health will suffer too. So personally, I like to have for me, it's fairly easy. I divide my day into mornings when I'm in airplane mode, so to speak, and I'm writing or creating. This morning I was working on my podcast. And then afternoons I'll be on Skype or Zoom with clients. That's when I have my social media time. That's when I answer my emails. And then in the evenings, again, I'm pretty well switched off from email. I might check in on Twitter or whatever, but that's family time for me. So that's my rhythm. Some of my clients hold their hands up in horror when I describe what a boring life I live. But for you, it's, you know, think about your own life. When do you write best? When do you want to be focused? When's the best time for you to be engaged and available? And try and have some, you know, some fairly strong rules around that, because that's a way of getting the best of both worlds. What you don't want is for one to be interrupting and being a distraction from the other.
Yeah. So you definitely go into a lot more about that in the productivity book, which is fantastic. And I think what's interesting about this book is you do bring in insights across the whole kind of creative career. But one thing I'm going to read a couple of the great sentences from the book and then kind of ask you what they mean. So the first one I like is, quote, "Forget the career ladder, start creating assets," end quote. So what do you mean by that? And what are some of the different asset types that authors in particular can be creating?
Well, this is kind of in response to partly my own situation and also working with clients and talking to other creatives. It's very easy for us to be, if you like, the odd one out in the family or the group of friends, and to be, you know, have well-meaning people close to us say, why can't you be a bit more like your cousin George, who's doing so well in the law firm or the accountants or whatever it is? And you look at cousin George, bless him, and he's climbing the ladder. He's got promotions, he's got job titles, he's got a company car, he's got a corner office, whatever. And on a bad day, it's very easy to be sat there thinking, and what have I got? It's just me in my studio or in my writing desk. And I don't know, I've had another rejection, or my latest release didn't go so well, or I'm stuck on a difficult part of the book. What am I just kidding myself? Am I wasting my time? And I think, but if you compare somebody, I'll give you an extreme example, someone at the very top of our industry, somebody like Stephen King, well, he doesn't generally worry about whether he's in line for promotion at the firm or whether his job is secure or, you know, what the people at the boardroom think of him, because he's got this body of work, which is effectively an asset or a set of assets. He's got all these books. He's got a great brand. He's got the intellectual property in the books. He's got that kind of recognition that if Stephen King were to email you and say, hey, Joe, do you think we could collaborate on a project? I mean, you'd at least take the call, wouldn't you?
I'd be like, anything you want, Stephen.
Right. So he doesn't want for opportunities or money. Now, maybe we're not all going to reach that level, but even if you've got one book, that's an asset for your career. That can be earning money. That can be bringing you readers. That can be growing your mailing list, your audience, your network. If it's a nonfiction book, you can be selling consulting and other products off the back of that. If it's a fiction book, then that's the start of your audience, and you'll be, of course, writing the next book and the next book and then the next book. The more books you have, the more enthusiastic subscribers to your mailing list or followers on social media, the more people know, like, and love your work, the more opportunities you have, and the easier it is to leverage that into income.
Well, I wanted to ask you particularly about there's different types of assets. I often, again, like you mentioned, I talk about books that can earn you income for the long term. But I also, what's interesting is you talk about different kinds of assets. So reputational assets, I thought was interesting because you are a poet, and which is one of those things I love about you. And you're like, I don't just do like poetry, I do like quite serious poetry, and it's not, you know, your translation of Chaucer, which has won you an award. This is not something that is necessarily an income generating asset, but talk a bit about reputational assets when it comes to creatives.
Yeah, so I think there's three basic kind of rewards on offer, apart from the sheer joy of doing it in terms of writing or making some kind of art. You've got money, you've got fame, i.e. how many people know about you, and you have reputation in the artistic sense. So, you know, to take an extreme example again, Jeffrey Hill, who died last year, widely considered, well, within the poetry world, to be possibly the greatest living poet in English. Most people had never heard of him. And I heard him interviewed, and he was saying, you know, when I look at my annual royalty statements, I appear to have hardly any readers at all. And yet, in a lot of people's estimation, he's a genius. And within the poetry world, that, I mean, he was Oxford professor of poetry. He was professor in the States. He always had plenty of opportunity, and he worked really hard for that. So, and again, if you're talking about popular entertainment, writing thrillers or romance or something, it's more at the fame end of the spectrum. Maybe you don't care what the New York Times or the Times Literary Supplement says or doesn't say about your work. But if you've got millions of readers, then hey, who cares? So, and I think it's really, you know, there's a huge difference if you're releasing your 20th book and you've got thousands of people on your list and looking for your work online to releasing the first one. So yeah, the book is an asset, but you also need the social assets, either in terms of critical reputation that can create opportunities in your artistic field, or just in terms of the sheer number of fans that you have and readers that you have waiting for that next book. Because if you do this right, you should make a lot more money from that book number 20 than book number one.
And it's interesting because that reputational asset, I mean, I still want to win an award. You know, I'm award nominated, but I'm not an award winning author. So to me, that is an ego goal, a reputational goal.
Right.
You know, and I want to do that in my lifetime. And I will probably have to give up an income goal in order to have that goal, because they don't necessarily go together. But I did want to come back on the money side. So another quote from the book: stop trying to earn money, start creating value. And I thought about this a lot. I mean, it's definitely something that I think I've tried to do with the creative pen. And I find it's easier with nonfiction in a way, because it's kind of, it's easier to answer someone's problem. Like someone has a problem and you can answer it with nonfiction. So you feel like, yes, I'm giving them value. But entertainment, which, let's face it, fiction, poetry, I guess it's entertainment. It comes under entertainment.
even if it's not always entertaining.
But I mean, it might come under inspiration, but it's not usually under information.
It's not going to help you fix your boiler.
No. So let's talk about creating value with fiction and poetry. How do we change our mindset around not trying to earn money, but creating value with entertainment?
Well, firstly, I would suggest that we just pause for a moment and think of the billions of dollars of value in the global entertainment industry, of which we're a part. So, in some sense, it's easier to say, you buy a book that's going to help you, I don't know, exercise more or procrastinate less or whatever it may be. And there's a clear practical value for that. But, I mean, there's a huge appetite for fiction, slightly smaller appetite for poetry. But
I don't know. It's one of the, apparently Ingram Spark have said poetry is their biggest segment in print publishing right now.
I should sign up to Ingram Spark sooner rather than later in that case. So I think people do pay money for fiction particularly. And I think the point I was trying to make there is just because you work really hard, it doesn't. You don't get paid for suffering and working hard. You get paid when you deliver something to market that is valued by your audience. So, you know, if you're a fiction writer and you're doing literary fiction, it's not going to be as easy to make money from that as it is if you're writing genre fiction. And usually people have made their peace with that. Sometimes they haven't and they complain about it loudly. But you've got to think about the reward that you want. But if you're interested in money, then it's really about looking through the other end of that telescope and thinking, what does the reader want? What can I give her? That, you know, is it more of this kind of book? Is it books in a different kind of format? And I know, Joe, you're very good at this. You've got all your books coming out in all possible formats.
Pretty much.
And it's great. And that's a very smart thing to do. And it's something I know you've nudged me to do more with my books. And I can be a bit lazy about that because I'm going to go and write the next book, which is, you know, working hard rather than smart. So it's about looking at how can I leverage what I've got in terms of existing assets and intellectual property. Things like film rights can come into play as well. And also thinking about, well, what could I create that would have the biggest impact for the least effort? I think that's a really interesting question to ask, rather than what's going to be. And again, I'm the world's worst at this in some ways, because I'd much rather be translating medieval poetry than writing something that's going to be mind-bendingly useful. But
and therein lies the problem for creatives. Or the, like you said, making your peace with it. You are at peace with the fact that you would rather spend a morning translating half a line of Chaucer. Or one word or whatever.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah. than creating another intellectual property asset, like a book in another format, for example. So I think this, it does come back to mindset. And I wanted to ask you about this, about, and the mindset stuff comes into the value and the earning money.
Yeah.
How do we change our money mindset? Because if you were chasing after that other $100 bill, you wouldn't do that Chaucer, but you're not. So you're, and you know, I've known you for a long time and I do find you very mature in the mindset thing. You come out of psychotherapy, you know, you have that attitude that's a healthy attitude towards money, which is, yes, I'd like to make money, but no, I'm not going to give up everything else in order to make money. So how do we balance that and change our mindset if we just think it's how many hours I work?
Right. So I think balance is the word I want to put out there, because it's really important. Firstly, you know yourself and you know your inclinations. So I know I just wouldn't be happy if I was writing stuff that was designed to be purely commercial all the time. I could look at a spreadsheet and come up with a logical argument for that, but my heart sinks just as I as I entertain that scenario. So I know I've got to come up. Think about your work as almost like an ecosystem. So in my ecosystem, I have some time, not all day, every day, devoted to poetry. I have other times devoted to making something that's going to be useful for my audience, like a book like this or a podcast. I also have a coaching business, which is my main business. And that is, you know, that's something I definitely don't neglect. So typically I spend, you know, as I said, I spend my mornings writing, the afternoons with my clients. So I'm balancing both sides every day. But, you know, one of the things I've noticed, and my coach, Peleg Top, pointed out to me a while ago, is that actually my kind of clients, one big reason they want to work with me is that I am following my own path. I'm doing my poetry. I'm doing something that they respect at a, you know, reasonably high artistic level. So actually they all, you've got this whole ecosystem and they all depend on each other, like the little fish and the jellyfish and the rays and the big shark. That's right. Let's not forget the sharks. And it's very easy to come in and say, I believe they did this at 3M years ago. You know, the people who made the post-it notes.
And earplugs. They are my favorite earplugs, 3M.
And earplugs. Well, they got some efficiency experts to come in and say, right, this company's doing really well. Excuse me, I've got a bit of a cold today. This company's doing really well. Just think how much better we could make them if we make them more efficient. So they went around the office and surprise, surprise, they found loads of examples of wastage, people hanging out by the water cooler, having unproductive conversations and office design. You know, you couldn't get too many people in the room, etc. And I mean, you can guess the outcome. They killed the innovation. They were in danger of killing the goose that was laying the golden eggs. Mm. And fortunately, they realized in time and they rode back. So I don't think you can look at a creative career and assess it purely in terms of efficiency and productivity. I think you've got to have the creative element in, if nothing else, because it buoys you up and it gives you energy. You know, if I've written my thing this morning, then I'm very happy to go out there and help someone else with their thing as a client, or, you know, to be doing some marketing stuff and putting things out into the world that are going to help other people. So I think as writers, we've got to find that balance between what we'd ideally like to write. And maybe we do that and something that's more pragmatic, or maybe we find something that's a bit more of a sweet spot. I like writing this. There's a good market for it. I'll focus all my efforts there.
I think you're right about, I mean, I find as well that I need the fiction and the nonfiction to kind of satisfy both sides of me. And also, I don't think I would have any credibility. I mean, if I was only writing nonfiction, that's fine. But yeah. I don't feel I could have the, I guess, the authority to even talk about this stuff unless I had books. So, yeah. You know, it's important, yeah, for me, even if I didn't want to do it. I mean, it's a credibility thing to keep creating as someone who talks to creatives. But also, as you say, it's it's like a life thing. Why else are we doing this? And I was also reminded when you were talking about that, I just spent a couple of days in London last week. I went to Edward Burne-Jones, which was a Pre-Raphaelite, artist. Yeah. And I generally spent about 2.5 days just wandering around London, just looking at stuff and taking pictures and writing in my journal. And, it, you know, some people would say that was not productive, but that gave me lots of ideas. And so what, and I've been on your show, obviously talking about the Healthy Writer, and of course on my show. So what's the place for rest / relaxation / recharging? If people, you know, when do people, I think we know when we hit burnout, but how do we sort of incorporate that?
Well, one of the things I say a lot to my clients is your body is your best coach. If you pay attention, it's giving you feedback about how tired it is or how stiff it is or how fed up it is of being cooped up in this office or whatever it is. But usually what do? We ignore it and we just kind of focus on here and just think, I'll have another Pro Plus or some more coffee and I'll get another gadget and make myself more productive that way. And I've certainly got into trouble by doing that. I've had, health and fitness problems from that. And I've learned the hard way from listening to it that actually I need to build in more time. So years ago, when my doctor was kind of signing me off with stress, he forbade me from doing any work in the evenings for my exams. And he said, you will actually be much more effective. You'll be able to learn more during the day if you take your evenings off. Now, at that time, it felt terrifying to me, but that's because I was stressed out. And I'm pretty well stuck to that. So it's quite rare that I will work at the weekend or an evening these days. I'm also trying to build in more movement during the day. So I'm learning Tai Chi, partly from a little nudge I got from reading this great book called The Healthy Writer and thinking, okay, I should be doing a bit more about that. And the nice thing about Tai Chi is I can do it during the day, in between writing, in between clients, even in between email. It's not, you don't need to go and get changed and don't get all hot and sweaty. So I can do 10 minutes here and there during the day. So that's making a big difference. So I would say, if you're listening to this and you're wondering where to start by listening to your body and noticing what are the aches and pains. And also one thing I noticed when I got a sit-stand desk, which this desk, I can press a button and stand up. And it's not that I press the button to stand up. The desk will stand up. I have to stand up manually. But one of the things I do now is I sit and I stand until I feel like I want to sit. And I sit until I feel like I want to stand. And what I've noticed is for years and years, I've been ignoring that urge to fidget and move about and get up. So I would say starts and finishes with the body.
Fantastic. That's, of course, we've talked about this a lot. And I think as this goes out, beginning of 2019, let's everybody try and listen to our bodies more, because it really is. It's so incredible. Like I've very much moved to mainly a lot of more plant-based eating in the last kind of 6 months, and I just feel so much better for it. And this is not, I'm not recommending that everyone do that. It's just that by listening to how things feel in the body, you can change. And changing is so important too, right? We all need different things at different parts of our lives. So, that's important. What worked for you 2 years ago might not work for you now, for example. And that's true in our businesses, right, as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, if there's one constant these days, it's change. And I think it's, again, the thing that I noticed about the happiest as well as the most successful creatives are the ones who go, oh, everything changed again. Where's the opportunity? Mm-hmm. What can I do? I mean, there's no time to sit around and complain, because the world is not going to change in relation to that. I know, because I tried it for several years and it didn't work.
And I mean, this is something that we always talk about when we get together. It's like, so what's moved on since we last had a chat? Yeah. And what do we need
to be? That's old news.
Yeah, what do we need to be doing next? So I do want to ask you, because the book has a lot of sort of really positive tips and things to change in terms of mindset and potentially business practices. But I love the fact you also say there is always a crappy part to any business. And yeah. One of the things I find, particularly authors are like, oh, you know, I just want someone to do the publishing for me, or I just want someone to do the marketing for me. All yeah. I want to do is write. And I'm sure you hear that in lots of different guises. So how, you know, how do we make sure that not everything's crappy? And, you know, what are your kind of tips in dealing with that crappy bit?
Well, I think, so this is something I see a lot because I work with clients across all the different creative industries and arts. So, you know, authors can complain about the publishing industry or can complain about Amazon or whatever. People in the film industry, there's a lot of politics. People in the advertising industry, there's a hell of a lot of politics and a fair bit of brutality as well. And one thing I noticed is you can always find, there will, whatever path you pick, there will be a crappy part. And that will be the, you know, the proverbial frog that you have to swallow every Monday morning when you go in to work. But the ones who are happy are the ones who say, yeah, I accept this because this is the price of the bit that I love. Mm. And if you can do that, then that's part of turning pro in Stephen Pressfield's language. You know, the pro is someone who says, yeah, it does suck. You know, I'd rather be writing than marketing, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because otherwise you're in the, was it Peter DeVries, the Australian novelist? I assume he was saying this tongue in cheek. He said, I love being a writer. What I can't stand is the paperwork.
It is a bit like that. I mean, there is that bit and you just kind of go, oh, do I have to do, like you said about me putting all my books into large print and hardback.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled about it, but boy, it's a pain in the neck because I have to keep uploading all these files and filling in these fields. And it's just like, oh, but there are benefits, so I'll do it.
It's a tough life. There's no doubt about it.
No, that's what I, that's
in
actually,
some aspects.
That's actually what I like about the book. And to everyone out there, it's a good book for kind of kicking you up the behind a little. This is not a nice creative book. This is how you can be more effective, which I like, which is fantastic. So as we are we're recording this just before the end of 2018, but it goes out in 2019. So I was wondering about you personally, what are you excited about in 2019 and even beyond? Like what are you taking as your next steps?
Well, so there's on my podcast, The 21st Century Creative, I'm into season 3 now, which is starting almost to feel like a proper podcast. And so I'm looking to do at least another 2 seasons of that in 2019. And one of the great things I've discovered about having a podcast now is that it's a great excuse to get in touch with people and sate my own curiosity. You know, if I see somebody making amazing art or doing something interesting in with technology or personal development, I can send them an email and say, hey, I'd love to have you on the show. And I ask them the questions that I'm curious about. So apart from any other benefits that come from having the show, it's just a great way of educating myself by interviewing lots of very smart people doing very clever and interesting things. So there's the podcast. I'm also creating another podcast, which is top secret for now, but will be completely different in form and content to the 21st Century Creative. And then I'm always learning something in my personal life. So Tai Chi is my latest enthusiasm. I'm very pleased to hear that the first thing I need to learn is a 74 move routine that takes about 3 years to learn. So I've found a great teacher who's helping me with that. I'm also learning Japanese, which is an ongoing project. So, and finishing my poetry collection. So there's always plenty to do. And I think, again, there is maybe a bit of tough love in the book. But at the same time, and I do come down on the side of the enthusiasts, by the way.
Yeah,
I do.
Definitely.
I do think it is a great.
We wouldn't be friends unless you did.
Right. And it is a great time of opportunity. And there is amazing things that we can do with the technology. So, the 2019 is going to be yet another year of discovery.
Yeah, exactly. I'm interested in the audio because, of course, you and I talk about this all the time. I think I may have even kicked you into doing the podcast.
Mm-hmm. You may have had something to do with that, yes.
in the first place. But I'm interested because, again, you have, you know, you have your coaching business, but you have books, you have, you know, the website, and you have a lot of technology as someone, you know, many people don't think that poets necessarily are really into tech. But I wonder if you know, can you talk about how you think that the podcast, particularly in audio, I guess, makes a difference in your business? So, because I know a lot of people are thinking about audio in 2019. Audiobooks are still going nuts as we speak on Black Friday. The Alexa and Echoes and everything, again, the biggest seller. We've got a massive kind of huge scope in audio. I think 2019 is going to be big. So what are your thoughts on how it fits into how you make income, I guess, with audio?
So you mean business wise rather than creatively?
Both really.
Okay. Well, I think first of all, what I love about it is it feels like a much more direct and immediate connection. I mean, I had a blog for over 10 years before I started podcasting, and it was very interesting. I remember one day a client said to me, I've been reading your blog for years, but it never occurred to me to hire you until I heard you interviewed on someone's podcast. And it may have been your podcast, actually, Joe, a while ago. And she said, because then I've just felt that connection and I knew this was somebody I wanted to work with. And so if you are a coach or a consultant of any kind, then I think there's a really important lesson there, because what we sell is conversations. So certainly I've seen the benefit of that. I've had people saying, oh, when I heard your podcast, I knew I wanted to talk to you. Even people who find me, say, on a search engine or via a book, nearly always by the time we have the first coaching conversation where we decide if we want to work together, they will say, oh, and I've been listening to the show. Mm. And they've been getting a sense of what I'm like from that. And I can point them to past episodes where I've actually interviewed previous clients of mine. So certainly from that point of view, it's been really great. Also, just in terms of content production, it's a lot. I wouldn't say it's quicker and easier necessary, but I am certainly creating more content. I think one thing I discovered that audio does take a bit more work when producing text. But again, a great tip I got from you was to start putting transcripts of the audio onto the website, so you get SEO benefits as well as accessibility from that. And I just think overall it is a really great way to give more to the audience, because I think we all feel when we hear somebody's voice, we feel a much stronger connection to them. I will be getting into audiobooks in 2019, so that will be hopefully another income stream from there. So I would say certainly if you're curious about it, then I would say creatively and business-wise, it's one of the best things I've done in several years.
Yeah, and obviously me too. And like you, I have another podcast coming in 2019.
Yay!
And it's funny, isn't it? And also maybe you could comment on, because you use dictation a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're actually using your voice to write your books as well.
Yes.
So have you found any changes or anything different through doing podcasting and kind of creating a different work for audio versus dictation for writing, or are they kind of completely different?
Well, poetry is always completely different. So I quite often write that in my head and then write it down afterwards. I tried using voice recognition. It doesn't work because I write poetry quite slowly. But certainly for prose, this was actually something, again, I discovered through not listening to my body. I had really bad RSI from having typing too much, having the bad posture and so on. Couldn't use a keyboard for 6 months, which was kind of inconvenient. This is 10 years ago when you have an internet-based business. And I discovered Dragon Naturally Speaking and started using it, which you could say probably saved my business because I could actually work again. But even when the RSI recovered, I discovered I preferred writing prose like this because I could make a few notes and really crank out an article or a chapter much more quickly and easily speaking than typing. And so I stuck with it. And some of the feedback I've got is people said, oh, it sounds much more like your voice now when I read your book than it did before. Yeah. much clearer, more of a flow. So yeah, so I use Dragon Dictate now, which is the Mac version, which isn't quite as good as the PC one, but I'm not going to buy a PC. So
oh my goodness, you must be one of the last creatives left on a PC. I'm saying that now, and there'll be half the listeners use a PC.
On a Mac. I've got a Mac, but I'm not going to buy a PC. I did actually
The other way around.
Years ago, I did install Windows on my MacBook Pro because that was the only way I could get Dragon Naturally Speaking to work. But now they've got a Mac version that's quite good. So
No, that's fantastic. Okay, So where can people find you and your books and your podcast and everything you do online?
Okay, so for the podcast, it's 21stcenturycreative.fm. That's the 21st Century Creative podcast. Then 21stcenturycreative.fm/21insights is where you can get the book, 21 Insights for 21st Century Creatives. And the ebook edition for that is free. If anybody's interested in getting some help as a one-to-one coaching client, then my site is lateralaction.com, and you can go there and you find my other books and blog that I've had for about 10 years or something as well. So,
yeah, fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Mark. That was great.
Thank you, Joe. It's always a pleasure.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Mark McGuinness today, and you can find much more from Mark on his fantastic 21st Century Creative podcast, available in all the usual places. Now, next week, I'm very excited. I've got an interview on voice technologies for authors, particularly with Bradley Metrock, who has a podcast called This Week in Voice and also runs Digital Book World and the Alexa Conference, and essentially is well up with the tech scene around voice. And we discuss the changes ahead, what's going on, and positioning for success in a voice first world. So I don't think it's a futurist episode, actually. It's a current state episode, I guess, depending on where you are in the world, but certainly very exciting times. So happy writing, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes, available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.